you get to one Bitcoin or you die trying. There's going to be many people that come after, you know, my time on YouTube that are going to have the opportunity to say, get to 0.5 Bitcoin, get to 0.1 Bitcoin or whatever else they want to say. I just think that's weak. I think if you're sitting here, you're in America, you're in the United Kingdom, you're in Canada, you're in Australia, and you've had these four years to figure out how to get to one Bitcoin when we've ranged from $15,500 up to $69,000 and you haven't done it, I think you deserve the pain of hearing me say you need to get to one Bitcoin, because you should be disappointed in yourself. You should be wondering how to get to one Bitcoin. You know why? Because I get emails from people that watch my videos from the Philippines who have figured out how to get to one Bitcoin. So if you're telling me you're sitting in America and you can't get to one Bitcoin, stop being a soy boy and figure it out. That's it. You've got one chance to do this. And if you don't do this, it's only going to be, Bitcoin is very, very simple, right? And the proposition is very, very simple. There's only 21 million. You've got to own as many as you can. You've got one chance to do it. And your progeny is going to cuss you out if you listen to Spaghetti Boy sell your Bitcoin at $200,000, which is where he says his power law gets to this cycle, and then it does a hockey stick straight to 500,000 because the United States starts buying. Go look at the chart for Tesla in 2019 and 2020. Nowhere in science is what they call the power law. Like, it's not a law. Like, it's literally an opinion and an extrapolation based on the directional data that's already come into fruition. So really, as new data comes along, it is going to be refit. Therefore, it's called a curve fit. And there's no power to it, and there's no law to it.
Bing bong, I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, British Hoddle in the house. But British, the power law has been making waves on Bitcoin Twitter, and you've been very outspoken against it. Why do you not believe it? And do you think it might be undershooting the potential price run-up?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me. The introduction that I've been given is this is the bar stool of Bitcoin. So I guess we're gonna unload a little bit. And with that first question, I can see exactly how this thing's going to go. So I guess we're going to have a little bit of fun here. Look, Spaghetti Boy thinks that Bitcoin follows some kind of two lines, which is basically a curve fit. Now, I'm not a PhD in mathematics, but they also said this about internet adoption, right? They also said this about many things, and internet adoption recently just moved away from its power law, quote unquote power law. And I laugh because nowhere in science is what they call the power law. Either, like, it's not a law, like, it's literally an opinion and an extrapolation based on the directional data that's already come into fruition. So really, as new data comes along, it is going to be refit. Therefore, it's called a curve fit. And there's no power to it, and there's no law to it. It's basically an extrapolation of previous data. So yeah, even though I'm not a math PhD, 5 minutes asking ChatGPT to explain what the fuck a power law is kind of tells you that this guy's a moron, right? And it makes sense when you studied mathematics at the University of Maharashi, whatever the fuck that it is. This is where we're at in Bitcoin, right? So look, bottom line is, Bitcoin is very, very simple, right? And the proposition is very, very simple. There's only 21 million. You've got to own as many as you can. You got one chance to do it, and your progeny is gonna cuss you out if you listen to Spaghetti Boy sell your Bitcoin at $200,000, which is where he says his power law gets to this cycle, and then it does a hockey stick straight to 500,000 because the United States starts buying, for example, right? I just don't think it's worth the risk to listen. And here's the crazy part. If you had this power law and you knew about it, why are you even talking about it? You should be using it to go and raise, you know, $20 billion to set up a hedge fund, if it's really that impressive, not selling $20 a month subscriptions, which is what Pastor Boy's doing. Is that a good start? Did I live up to the spirit of Barstool of Bitcoin yet, or what? Where else are we going to go with this?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's great, but why do you think the obsession with, like, this power law or predicting the Bitcoin price in general? Because last cycle, we saw, you know, the stock to flow make waves with Plan B. He gained a lot of popularity, and then all of a sudden he was nailing it until he wasn't. So why do you think there's this big obsession to try to figure out the Bitcoin price instead of, you know, just, I guess, hodling here and making it easy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that now we're talking about human psychology. Human psychology is very afraid when it is dealing with something that it doesn't know, it's unfamiliar with. And all of human psychology, modern human psychology, when it comes to investing, has been based on the S&P 500, has been based on the QQQ, has been based on real estate. That's basically going up 7 to 15% a year, and you can get your head around it. And now you've got an asset that goes up 400% 1 year, takes an 80% dip for the next 3 years, and then goes up another 400 or 500%, you know, in 4 years. Like, this is something that human beings are not used to. We've been conditioned to deal with cash flow. We've been conditioned to deal with regular income. We've been conditioned to deal with all of these things that Bitcoin doesn't allow for. We are breaking the models on this. And you can tell this because look how many people missed out on Tesla in 2019, 2020. And guess what happened? That's the closest thing that I can relate this to when I'm talking to people, when they're trying to talk about the power of opinion or whatever else. It's like, go look at the chart for Tesla in 2019 and 2020. And the Russell 2000 asset managers decided one day that they needed an allocation, and that was it. You were your complete allocation, if you were trying to trade in and out of it, was completely gone. And you missed out on so many opportunities because you were trying to time the price. And you can't do that with a once in a species asset like Bitcoin.
Now, do you think the human psychology just can't grasp the digital scarcity aspect of it, or is there some other aspect about Bitcoin that, you know, maybe the psychology just can't grasp?
It's not the digital scarcity. Human psychology can't handle the idea of finality of scarcity in anything, right? Human beings wouldn't be able to handle it if we told them that there was actual scarcity with gold. There isn't actual scarcity with gold, which is why we can deal with gold. There isn't actual scarcity with real estate, which is why we can deal with real estate. We have never, ever experienced an asset that will drive human beings to Hunger Games level of acquiring this asset, desiring this asset, when it comes down to everyone is educated on what it is and how it works. We have never, ever experienced this. Human beings have never, ever experienced an asset with absolute finality of scarcity. And that's why everyone's trying to box it in. Oh, it must fit this model. It must fit that model. We don't know how to deal with this asset. And what we're experiencing right now is the chaos of it. That's all it is.
Yeah. So with that chaos, we've seen, you know, ETFs, we've seen traditional finance start to get into it. We've seen countries start to get into it with, you know, El Salvador, Kingdom of Bhutan now mining, and maybe some others, the U.S. potentially using it as a, you know, strategic reserve. But we've been kind of floating around this 60K mark then. So, like, who do you think is selling off on this news? And why haven't we seen then this big blow off the top just yet?
In last year, I said that what we're going to go through as soon as the ETFs are approved is in markets, it's a rotation, but of owners, right? So what we've had is we've got a lot of people out there that own 1,000+ Bitcoin, for example, and they want to sell because they've been holding since it was $5 a coin, right? So they want to sell. The ETFs are here. They want to offload. They want to enjoy their life. They want to buy a house. They want to take care of their family. They want to do whatever they're doing. And so what's happening right now with the fact that the price has been so stable is quite remarkable when you think about an asset like this. And the reason why it's stable is those people are selling into the market and the ETFs are extracting from the market. BlackRock, since launch on January 11th, has had, I think, 4 days of net outflows. And the net outflows are a total of like $150, $200 million after the $20 billion that went into it, right? So what's happening here is a rotation of owners, and this is going to take some time. It's just natural, right? As people sell, people buy, and this has to happen and clear out. Once it clears out, we're going to start seeing the price go one direction because BlackRock isn't selling, right? The clients that are using the BlackRock ETF, these are not people who are, you know, who are trying to buy a house. These are not people who are trying to pay for their kids' school, right? That's not who this is. These people have houses, have cars, take the vacations, have the kids educated. Everything is already set. They are allocating forever. So we're pivoting from the early adopters to the forever allocators. And that's going to take some time. And once that clears out, we should start seeing the price go up quite nicely.
Yeah, but it seems like, you know, you mentioned BlackRock, right? They're having a lot of these people buy and to sell. but only 8.4 after a quick Google search here, percentage of hedge funds actually own these ETFs. But there's been a shit ton of money that's coming in. There was like 2.1 billion within this past week or so. So with all of that, you know, why is there not more mass adoption then with the hedge funds? Is it because it's only 1% of 1%, or what, why do you see that?
No, this is all. So to put it into perspective, the top 500 asset managers in the world control about $130 trillion of capital. And what we're going through right now is a very uncertain period in America, right? With the politics that you guys have going on, the election coming up in 10 days, something like that. This is all uncertainty. Uncertainty doesn't work when it comes to markets. Markets need certainty. The exciting thing is that this time around, not only are we about to get certainty, but we're also about to like walk into a market that is now fully educated by BlackRock about why they need Bitcoin, right? BlackRock controls, you know, not directly, but you know, in my conspiracy mindset, BlackRock instructs all of those 500 asset managers what to do, and they're about to open the floodgates and lower interest rates and loosen monetary policy. We're about to see a phenomenal time period here over the next 18 months, but we have to get through some of these uncertainties that are in the market. And one of them, unfortunately, is whether you want President Trump or Vice President Kamala Harris.
Well, with that, you know, you said that all these hedge funds are communicating. Now, that sounds like a way to manipulate markets. So do you think that BlackRock has, one, been either attempting to manipulate the Bitcoin market and unsuccessful, or, and on the flip side of that, have they been manipulating the stock market basically since existence?
There is no such thing as manipulation of markets, right? I know a lot of people, you like to use that phrase and whatever else. But when you study, like everyone likes to talk about the gold markets being manipulated. Peter Schiff, Robert Kiyosaki, all these people like to talk about that. The reality is they've been investigated. JP Morgan got fined, I think, $30 million for it. And all they were doing was, quote unquote, spoofing the market, which is if the price is at $2,500 an ounce, they'll put a bunch of sell orders at $2,400. As the price comes down to it, they'll cancel the sell orders. There's never been this crazy amount of manipulation in the markets. The whole point of ETFs, actually, was to make the markets more efficient. So when everyone talks about manipulation, what they're actually talking about is natural human instinct. Because if I had that amount of capital to push around, I would also be using algorithms to time when I should get in and only put certain sell orders or certain buy orders in order to make sure I get the right price. Because the worst thing you want to do is at a $60,000 Bitcoin, go in and put, you know, $4 billion worth of buy orders in there because the price is going to skyrocket. So what you want to do is you sit there, you build an algorithm, and Coinbase is doing this for Michael Saylor. And he's talked about this. You build an algorithm and it sits there. As soon as someone sells, you know, let's say someone sells 0.1 of a Bitcoin, he wants to buy 30,000 Bitcoin. It will never put the orders in the market. But if someone sells 0.1 Bitcoin, it will snap it up. And then another order comes in for 3 Bitcoin, it will snap it up. And it will keep doing that until the full 30,000 Bitcoin order is fulfilled. That's how smart players do this. So manipulation, when someone says manipulation to me, that just means they're not educated on how markets work on a large scale.
All right, I gotcha. Well, then you did mention Michael Saylor, right? I mean, he's been making waves with a few different things that he's been doing, but obviously the biggest one, putting Bitcoin on MicroStrategy's balance sheet and using the traditional financial methods, getting debt basically to buy more Bitcoin. Now, why do you think there hasn't been more companies that have been following suit? And do you think it's just because Michael Saylor's a little bit smarter than everybody? Like, why is he so, bullish here on Bitcoin?
Michael Saylor's definitely smarter than everybody else in the corporate space. And I'll tell you why, because he is very early managed to become aware that the life cycle of his business that he started, MicroStrategy, was coming to an end, right? What he did was he decided to pivot MicroStrategy from a tech company that's basically not growing cash flows, not growing revenues, into an asset holding company in order to buy time, in order to figure out what's going on after that. So if you remember back, what they did was when they first announced that they were going to buy Bitcoin, they offered to buy out their shareholders, right, at a premium if they didn't agree with the strategy. He then sat down with the board and got the board on side one by one in order to do it. And so there was a step-by-step process that educated the markets that MicroStrategy was pivoting business models. And that's what they have now, right? And he's done a good job at that. If you try to go to Apple, right? Like you don't, as a shareholder of Apple, I'm not paying them my money. I'm not giving them my money to hold Bitcoin. I can do that myself. What I'm investing in Apple for is the innovation that they promise, is the new products, is the customer satisfaction, is everything else. So it's a slightly more weird proposition for Apple to turn around and say, we're going to pivot our entire treasury into Bitcoin. Now, will they do 4 or 5%? That's what we've just had with Microsoft, right? Potentially come out. That's an option. And we'll see whether they execute on that or not. But as far as like other businesses being smarter or not, no, I think that MicroStrategy was just in a very unique point in its life cycle. And Michael Saylor, who, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting, the man is one of the, probably if not the smartest person I've ever met, the fastest thinking person I've ever met. And he was just willing to ride with it. And that's what you get. You grow your company valuation from 1.6 billion when I first started buying to, you know, $40 billion. Like it's a nuts story in a 4-year window.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he also has the unique situation of just, you know, the software company being sticky, having constant cash flow coming in order to pay off that debt to buy more Bitcoin. But, you know, you brought up Microsoft because I think this is kind of interesting, right? They're having a vote in December to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. But in that notice, they said basically they don't want to do it. Now, with seeing the success of MicroStrategy, why would you play devil's advocate for me? Why wouldn't you want to do it?
Yeah, because let's clarify who said they don't want to do it. This is a vote for the shareholders. It's the board that's saying we urge the shareholders to vote no, right? So if you're a board member of Microsoft and your shareholders say, hey, I want shareholder value accreted to me, and in order to do that, I'm going to need to buy Bitcoin. What are you saying about the board of Microsoft thus far, right? You're basically saying they haven't delivered any value appreciation for you. And in order to beat this tiny company called MicroStrategy, Microsoft needs to turn to Bitcoin rather than their own innovation. So the board will need to be re-educated and reset, which it will be if the shareholders are aligned with it. So we'll find out on December 10th whether they want to go ahead and study that or not. But I will say, you know who the top two shareholders of Microsoft are, right? Number one is Vanguard. And everyone says Vanguard has a problem with Bitcoin. They don't. They actually just prefer Bitcoin through equities, right? Because all that time period where they were, you know, shutting down Bitcoin ETFs, you could still go and buy MicroStrategy, right? You could still go and buy MicroStrategy through Vanguard. So Vanguard likes Bitcoin. They just want it through equities, which sticks with their premise of who they are. And the second biggest shareholder is BlackRock. So it's like, Is this a game that's being played in the in the background? I just released a video on this, so we'll see how this pans out.
I do think it's probably a game being played on it, if I'm being honest here.
I don't believe in coincidences.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But, you know, you also talk a lot in your videos about getting to one Bitcoin. Now, we've talked a little bit about the price kind of floating around 60, 67K, I think it is at the time of this recording, and how there's a potential to blow off the top. Now, why do you think it's so important to get to one Bitcoin? And obviously, that's going to get a lot more harder, you know, here potentially in the next few months. So do you think that's even obtainable for the average person here going forward?
Yeah, I thought about whether I would change my messaging or not as we move forward. And I decided no, because I decided that while Bitcoin has absolute finality of scarcity, my message should also have finality of scarcity. And that message is you get to one Bitcoin or you die trying. There's going to be many people that come after, you know, my time on YouTube that are going to have the opportunity to say get to 0.5 Bitcoin, get to, you know, 0.1 Bitcoin or whatever else they want to say. I just think that's weak. I think if you're sitting here, you're in America, you're in the United Kingdom, you're in Canada, you're in Australia, and you've had these 4 years to figure out how to get to one Bitcoin when we've ranged from $15,500 up to $67,000, $69,000, and you haven't done it, I think you deserve the pain of hearing me say you need to get to one Bitcoin, because you should be disappointed in yourself. You should be wondering how to get to one Bitcoin. You know why? Because I get emails from people that watch my videos from the Philippines who have figured out how to get to one Bitcoin. So if you're telling me you're sitting in America and you can't get to one Bitcoin, stop being a soy boy and figure it out. That's it. You got one chance to do this. And if you don't do this, it's only going to be everyone who carries your last name going forward that's going to look at you and go, why the f*** didn't you figure it out?
Okay, you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So being a Bitcoiner means having options, self-sovereignty, but that only works if you have full control over your money and your privacy. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. All right, enough from me. Back to the show. I mean, I love it, dude. So, I mean, yeah. I think, what do you suggest to people to try to get to that? Do you think selling off all of their assets, getting just going all in on Bitcoin, like what do you think is the way to kind of get towards that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did. Once I figured it out, I started pivoting my assets in April of 2020 and figured out how to get my allocation of Bitcoin that I wanted, that I'd set my sights on. Right. And if you listen, I'm not your daddy. Right. Like, I'm not going to tell you what you need to do. All I know is that you know how to earn money. Right. So if you're either going to set up a business, you're going to have a side hustle, you're going to go get a job that's better, you're going to cut back on your spending, you're going to do whatever. But you're going to either get to one Bitcoin or you're going to listen to these other weak people that are saying, oh, no, 0.1 Bitcoin's fine. 0.5 Bitcoin's fine. Point whatever the fuck Bitcoin's fine. I'm telling you right now, Bitcoin. You know, there's people in this community, right, that I describe as happy hippies, right? What these happy hippies like to do is think that because you have 0.00001 Bitcoin, you get to sit at the same table as someone who has 1,000 Bitcoin. And that's just not how reality works. You're dealing with a scarce thing. So what's going to happen is, if you're sitting there and you're listening to these morons that are out there trying to make you feel good, trying to make a name for themselves by telling you what you want to hear, which is, it's okay if you've got just the one Bitcoin, 0.1 Bitcoin, that's all right. It's okay. You're going to be left there holding your dick in your hands while everyone else that actually got to one Bitcoin is going to start directing how the world works. And then you're going to have to fall in line, because we live right now, in my opinion, in the most protestable time in history, right? This is not normal. You don't just get to stop working and go out and protest shit whenever you want to. That's for now. In a Bitcoin world, you're not going to be able to do that, because whoever owns the Bitcoin makes the rules. Big bank takes little bank every time. And I just think that the strongest position to be in is one Bitcoin. And if anyone doesn't agree with me, that's okay. We'll just figure it out in about 10 years.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned how you sold off all your assets. You've also spoken at length about how you think real estate is a shitcoin. Now, I want to get into that and why you think that is the case. When, you know, I mean, the argument to the real estate bros is that you can't make any more land, right? So why do you think that there is not finality when it comes to real estate comparing it to Bitcoin?
Yeah, because look at what's going on with real estate. Yes, okay, there's no more land, but you can now build up into the sky. And if you didn't believe in no more land, Dubai proved you wrong, because they just built islands in the middle of the ocean and start building real estate on it, right? So that whole land thing is a bunch of BS. Every other asset besides Bitcoin is basically controlled on the supply side, right? Governments can dictate how many are built, how many are mined, how many are issued in terms of stocks. Governments can dictate all of these things through incentives. The only asset that is actually controlled on its supply side is Bitcoin. That's it. There is nothing else. And when it comes to real estate specifically, what I've actually said is that prime real estate will continue to flourish. It's the normal everyday real estate that won't. Why? Because it's the number one asset that governments are incentivized to target in terms of making easy for the average person to vote for. Because we live in a quote-unquote democracy, right? It'd be much better if we didn't live in a democracy, because then you could be like, yeah, real estate's going to be fine. But we live in a democracy. And in a democracy, you need peasants to vote for you. And what do peasants need? They need a roof over their head. So when the price of property is going through the roof, the first thing that a government can attack is the price of real estate. So your single-family homes, et cetera, are going to be on the chopping block. They might be good for cash flow, but in terms of actual capital appreciation, that has to slow down, because we've got to let productivity catch up to how far these prices have appreciated.
Now, what do you mean by prime real estate and just, you know, the average Joe Schmo real estate? Like, go through the little distinction there. It's like prime, like in Manhattan, and then, you know, Joe Schmo is upstate New York kind of thing. Like, how do you differentiate those?
Yeah, like prime real estate is like, you know, Central Park, right? There's like one building there. It overlooks the entire park. It's the only set of penthouses that have that view. That's prime real estate. It's like beachfront property, right? Prime real estate. Yeah, that's prime real estate. When you're talking about single family homes in the suburbs, that stuff has to be controlled at this point, because otherwise these governments are going to basically find themselves voted out, because no one wants to vote for anyone who can't give them a roof over their heads, right? And you're seeing that right now, where there's like bills trying to pass Congress, which is going to force hedge funds to dump their real estate holdings onto the market. And that's going to bring down prices. They're not dumping prime real estate onto the market. So if you ever want, you know, a 6-bedroom mansion beachfront in California, that's still going to be expensive.
Now, I hear you on that. And it seems like they're already starting to try to implement some controls on that. So with maybe going a little tinfoil hat here, how extreme do you think that some of these controls are going to get, especially as we get into a world of, you know, potential hyperinflation? If we start printing, letting QE go, do you think that we're going to get into a world like that? And then, you know, the government's going to have to put in rent controls, price controls, all that kind of stuff soon?
The government doesn't need to do any of those things. All they've got to do, because remember, I'm not talking about, we don't need to crash the market, right? That's one way of doing it, but we don't need to do that. All you can do is keep the market stagnant for 20 years. Let's say someone's got a single family home right now, not prime real estate, right? How would you feel if that property stayed at this price, whatever it is today, for the next 20 years?
Probably not good,
but that is a form of taxation. Right? That is a form of taxation, because they've stolen that 20 years of growth from you. But in 20 years, the amount of wage growth we'll have in that time period will make property affordable again. So the number one, and by the way, that's the number one target, because you can't target equities investors, right? Equities investors are harder to target. You can target real estate guys. And real estate guys, by the way, the number one asset for the group between 500,000 and 30 million is real estate. So they're the ones that are going to get completely screwed at this point. It's not going to be the ultra high net worth, because they've got lawyers, right? They've got senators. They've got people that can lobby for them. It's really the $500,000 to $30 million net worth that's going to end up getting screwed over the next 20-year period.
Are you looking for a way to earn some free sats? Who isn't? Well, I've got the perfect way for you. It's an app called Yopaki. Besides having the absolute coolest name in the game, they've got an interactive card game called Lotteria. Oh, look at that accent. I'm just hitting it, huh? That can teach you the history of Bitcoin and financial literacy. They've got amazing services and one of the slickest mobile wallets. Download it now using this link, and you can get 500 sats on the house on Green Candle, and then you can play Lotteria every single day in order to potentially get some sats. All you got to do is match the cards, and it's an extremely fun and interactive way to learn more about Bitcoin. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Okay, so do you think that's like when they're saying tax the rich, right? Because that's obviously one of the messages from the left. Do you think that's who the quote-unquote rich is, and they're just using Donald Trump as like essentially a figurehead? Although he does have a lot of real estate, his is more on the commercial side of things. So it seems like, you know, from 500,000 to 30 million, you know, that $30 million does sound like a lot of money, but that isn't really that much of commercial real estate if you really break it down. So is that why, you know, they're kind of think they're spouting out tax the rich? That's who they're targeting?
No, I think, look, we're delving into my personal political opinions, which are irrelevant because I don't vote. I'm not an American. I don't vote in America. But as far as I'm concerned, they're spouting that because they're stupid, right? It's just as simple as that. The left is stupid and they're spouting tax the rich. They don't realize what they're really talking about is taxing their own moms and dads, because that's who's going to fall into that category. Now, if they end up trying to come up with an unrealized cap gains and this, that, and the other, I think that would be disastrous for American capital markets. And I just don't think that's going to happen, by the way. I can't see the people that actually controlling America letting that through. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that's all fair. All right, now enough of this real estate talk. We'll get back into Bitcoin. We'll get back to the juicy stuff here. So, you know, obviously Bitcoin has been somewhat on the ballot. You know, we've had Trump, RFK attend the Bitcoin conference. Now, do you think that this is going to be a bigger talking point going forward? And I guess why now? Why do you think that the presidents and everybody is the political parties are starting to get into this conversation?
Yeah, well, the one thing I don't think for 100% sure is that President Trump or anyone on, you know, any of the elected senators sat down and read the Bitcoin Standard. I do not think that happened, right? I'm much more inclined to believe that an envelope showed up on their desk and it basically said, if you want any more campaign funding from this source, you're now pro-Bitcoin. And they all went, yeah, well, I guess I'm now pro-Bitcoin. Right, I do not believe that these elected senators are morons that are taking everyone to war at the first sign of trouble are going to sit there and suddenly have a come to Jesus moment about Bitcoin. I think they've been incentivized to do so, and that's just my speculation on that. Now, as far as why are they doing it? Well, I think it's a growing asset class. When you think about Charles Schwab's latest data with how many people, I think it's an exponential amount of people generation to generation that are going to start owning Bitcoin and owning digital assets. So whichever party, and it happens to be the Republican Party this time around, who has figured this out, can become the party of that asset, I think that benefits them long term. And I think that's what they're looking at. I think they're looking for votes, they're standard politicians. And I think if they really understood Bitcoin, I don't think President Trump, by the way, who I like, was the only one in the United Kingdom as a non-American wearing a Make America Great Again hat in 2016. I think if he understood it, he wouldn't have said, have fun playing with your Bitcoins at the end of the speech. Is that unfair?
No, I don't think that's unfair at all. I agree with you. I don't think he really understood it. I was there when he had the talk. I think, you know, he did realize, he used it almost as like another campaign speech, like on the trail, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And,
you know.
It is what it is. You know, like at the end of the day, I don't need the president understanding how Bitcoin works. The president's job is not to understand how every little thing works. The president's job is to sit there and go, what is the smartest thing to do? You know, one of the reasons why I live in Dubai most of the year, right, is that the UAE feels like this place, this country, where it's like five men that decided to grab their favorite cigar, sit around a table and go, what would make this place really good, right? And then they come up with a list of it, they debate it, and then they go, all right, make it happen. And it just happens. That's what you want the president to do. You want the president to make decisions about what's good. Now, I just brought up this Charles Schwab data on my side. Check this out. This is insane. Out of boomer ETF investors, only 15% own cryptocurrencies, right? You move that to Gen X, and it's 44%. You move that again to millennials, and it's 62% own cryptocurrencies. So this party has decided that they want to become the party of that because people are going to hopefully vote for their wallet. And that's another reason why you want to make people as poor as possible, right? Because you make people as poor as possible. Now they're dependent on the state. Now they're no longer voting for their own incentive. They're voting to be safe and be saved by the state. So there's all these other societal agendas that are happening. But I think President Trump, his team, has dialed in on the fact that there is this big voting base and emerging voting base, and they're trying to secure three elections, not just one.
Do you think that, though, this could be a potential positive where, you know, maybe they don't read the Bitcoin Standard, but they learn a bit more about Austrian economics. They keep things like, you know, interest rates a little bit higher. They don't get into all this money printing and cause hyperinflation. Like, would this help delay some of that? or do you think it's just a, you know, voting ploy at this point?
You are an incredible optimist, and I hope that we go down the path that you're saying right now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm always trying to look as the glass half full at a certain point in time, but you know, I think that, you know, at this point, what we're looking at is, you know, both presidential candidates, whoever gets elected into office, is going to want to lower interest rates. And if there's one thing that we're already learning, inflation isn't dead already, even though they've kind of marketed it that way with CPI being lower and everything like that. So my worry is that we're going to reach into a big depression, maybe recession or something like that in the next year, year and a half, no matter who's elected. Now, I think if Kamala Harris gets elected, we're going to print into the oblivion and kick that can down the road 4 more years so the Democratic Party can say again, hey, you know what? We need to come in and fix this. Whereas
if you don't think Trump's going to do that?
I think that Trump's going to lower interest rates, but the powers that be hate him so much that they're going to try to crash the market and he's going to have to try to rebuild it. And then
I completely disagree. But again, my opinion doesn't matter. I'm not an American voter. I'm just like entertained by what's going on over there, right? I should be able to vote because I have enough money in America. I should come up the fucking southern border and vote like a Mexican 5 times, right? But the reality is this, like, Trump's going to print the money. Kamala's going to print the money. Everyone's going to print the money. You could put Joe Biden in there, and in his capacity as a dementia patient, he's going to print the money, because that's what the dollar is. The dollar is an inflation tool. There is going to be money printing. I don't care who the president is. That's an inevitability. Who the president is just tells you, like, what excuse are we going to use to print the money? That's it. And as far as I'm concerned, whatever, as a person that lives like an American elite, which is basically outside of America while benefiting from America, whatever. I don't care. You want to change the weather? Print some money. You want to lower some taxes? Print some money. I don't give a shit, right? But again, someone who's living inside of America, you have to think about these things. Like, okay, which excuses do we want to print money? I much prefer the excuses of let's give tax incentives for people to build businesses than, you know, let's try and change people's genders. But this is a personal decision that you got to make.
Yeah, and I mean, I hear you there. And I mean, it is interesting. But I mean, I agree with you to an extent. Like, I mean, whether you like it or not, like the QE, the lowering interest rates, that's, you know, theoretically a way of a quote unquote money printing and getting it that way. But, you know, with that, where do you see us in the kind of macro environment right now? Do you think we're just teetering on the edge of a recession? And then that's going to be the interesting time we see a Bitcoin bull run potentially in a recession? Or do you think there's a way out of this?
I think we have gone from, you know, crash landing to hard landing to soft landing to Larry Fink basically coming out and saying there's no landing, right? So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's what's going to happen, right? Whether it's right or not, whether it's true or not, rather, in the real world, that's a different story. But what's about to happen is that America's going to do a V-shaped rocket launch here, like one of Elon's rockets. And it's going to land smooth like that, like the pylon that came down the other day, the 24-story pylon that came down. So, you know, I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think this is going to be a hard crash landing. I do not look at any data and go, there's a massive recession coming. I think doom and gloom boomers, as I like to call them, and not all of them are boomers, right? I've met 20-year-olds that are doom and gloom boomers, and it shocks me. I'm like, you should have, the most optimism about the time that we live in out of anyone, because we live in amazing time period right now, right? We've got the least amount of poverty. We've got the most amount of abundance in the world. You should be taking advantage of these things, not sitting there going, oh, my God, there's going to be a depression coming. So as far as I'm concerned, looking at trends, the depression of my generation was 2008. And historically, that type of thing only happens once every 70 to 80 years. So if I'm lucky, I'll get to see another one, but I think it's over for now.
All right. Well, that's fair to say. And then, you know, you did bring up the reasoning for money printing. So I want to toss out a scenario to you. So theoretically, because the U.S. has the global reserve currency, we could print the U.S. dollar to buy Bitcoin or buy hard assets. Do you ever see that as a potential possibility?
100%. Well, they've already said that they wanted, I think Cynthia Lummis is putting the bill through, which is trying to build a strategic national reserve for Bitcoin, for the US. Like, where do you think that money's going to come from? They're going to print the shit out of the US dollar to put it into Bitcoin. And that'll be great, because that's what you should be doing. Instead of sitting there, every country should have a sovereign wealth fund, right? There's a reason why the UAE works so well. There's a reason why, you know, the Nordic countries work so well in a capitalist way, because they have a sovereign wealth fund. The United States should have a sovereign wealth fund for its people. And the fastest way to do that is to print some money and buy some Bitcoin. And it looks like they're going to do it. We'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, I think President Trump came out and said that they're looking at what the UAE is doing and potentially considering all federal income taxes and replacing them with just straight tariffs.
I'll be over there faster than a Mexican coming up the southern border if they get rid of those income taxes and capital gains taxes and all that shit. That'll be great. I wish my country did that, because that would spark an era for America like you cannot even imagine. If they get rid of income taxes, they get rid of capital gains taxes, they get rid of inheritance taxes, every single person who is a value creator in the world will want to be in America. It's as simple as that. That is the best thing President Trump can do for his legacy for America. And if he manages to do it, that'll be good. I just don't believe that he's going to manage to do it.
Calling all shadowy supercoders. I've got an event specifically for you. That's right. I am working with PlebLab to help out with Top Builder. Top Builder, it's like the Top Chef, but for shadowy supercoders. They've got a Bitcoin prize worth of $15,000 that you can earn when you showing off your skills. But not only that, you will gain valuable exposure, mentorship, and great collaboration opportunities. And a lot of people raised money last year, not just the winner. So you have the potential to show your stuff. All you got to do is sign up now. Between now and December 31st, go through 3 rounds where you are showing your skills. And then at the end, you will showcase your stuff at Startup Day down in Austin. So go ahead and sign up now and get everything started for Top Builder and showcase your stuff and help build in the Bitcoin ecosystem. All right, enough for me. Back to the show. Now, why do you think that hasn't already happened in like Dubai, UAE area? If those are kind of similar policies there, why?
There's no taxes. I don't pay no taxes. What are we talking about? There's no taxes in the UAE.
Yeah. So then, why isn't there more prosperity in the UAE comparatively? Is it just because?
What are you talking about? It was a desert 25 years ago. 30 years ago, it was a shithole, as your ex-president has used to describe certain countries. It was a f-ing desert. There was a visionary who sat there, looked at the sand, looked at the skyline, and drew out in the sand exactly what the skyline was going to look like. And 30 years later, you have some of the most forward thinking going on right now, right? They're a brand new country. You got to give it. Imagine, look at what they're doing right now in 30 years. Imagine what it's going to be like in another 30 years. The compounding is just increasing and increasing and increasing. So yeah, the prosperity is coming, but it takes time, right? And the amount that they've managed to do, look at Singapore. Singapore is a great example of this, because the Brits gave up Singapore, gave up supporting Singapore in the 1960s, early 1960s. Singapore then was basically a socialist state run by the president, Lee Kuan Yew. Lee Kuan Yew lasted, like, he just went straight from 64 or 63 all the way to the 2000s. Then, early 2000s, he decided to take a sabbatical as the leader and decided to go teach at Harvard in the USA. He was teaching there and he goes, "This capitalism thing is kind of cool, right? Like, this is actually creating some real, really good prosperity." This is a socialist leader. Went back to Singapore, pivoted the entire country after that 40 years of ruling one way to capitalism. And now you have the Singapore that you have now. It doesn't need to take a long time, but that switch has to happen. And that switch has happened in the UAE, and it's accelerating. So the only thing that the US, the UK, and other countries have to worry about is, how do we like actually take some of that? How do we, and the UK is now feeling this, because the UK lost 9,500 millionaires, or are going to lose 9,500 millionaires this year after 3,500 walked out last year. And it's just been going like crazy. And then they decided to get rid of something called a non-dom tax status, which basically means you can come and bring your money over here and you don't pay taxes on it. And now they're walking it back. right? They're considering not doing it in the next budget that's coming up in a few days. So these countries are going to have to start realizing that people are not slaves, right? Yeah, there's people that can't afford to leave that talk about leaving, but the people that can afford to leave are just going to leave.
Now, you said something interesting there about, you know, the Singapore president who came over and said, hey, this capitalism thing is cool. If you ask a lot of Americans, they either some of them think it's not true capitalism over here. Do you subscribe to that theory, or do you think that
it's more capitalism than anywhere else in the world? America has more capitalism than the United Kingdom. It has more capitalism than the EU. It has more capitalism than Canada. It has more capitalism than anywhere. It is certainly bloated right now, right, with bureaucracy and everything else that's going on. But it certainly is the fastest place for someone who's got no assets to come and then rise straight to the top. You can't do that in the UK, because at a certain level, you're going to hit an aristocratic ceiling. You just can't do it. So whereas the America, you can still get from the bottom right to the top. Albeit now they're going to use lawfare and everything else that's in the way to try and stop you. And we need to deal with those things. But it's still the best economy for someone who's starting, you know, from scratch to get to the top. Why do you think, even though I don't live in America, I still have my capital and my assets held in America? So there's a reason for that. Right. And America is the best capital markets in the world, the biggest, baddest, best. And I actually think a lot of Americans need to start appreciating what they have. When I speak to my American friends, half the time they're complaining about absolute bullshit. And I'm like, you better start appreciating what you have. Otherwise, you know, brown people are going to come over there and appreciate it for you.
Hey, I mean, we've seen that already happen in Canada and, you know, in some other places across the world.
Well, they don't have much to appreciate in Canada. That's the problem. I'm only joking.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hear you on that, though, too, because it is getting more tyrannical up there, to say the very least. But, you know, you've seen other countries kind of make it less advantageous for people to move there, like Italy, for example, increasing the tax, capital gains tax on Bitcoin and other cryptos. Now, why aren't countries learning from what things like El Salvador, UAE, and all these others that are, you know, they're seeing people mass exodus? Do they just think they're going to call people's bluff at this point? Like, what's your theory behind that? Why countries aren't making it more advantageous for the people?
Because we're early, right? We're early. And if you think about it, right, let's say the UK has I'll use the UK because it's my example. The UK has a really big advantage here. Because let's say in 5 years, in 10 years, I'm living in Dubai and the UK says, we've now seen the errors of our ways and we're now going to lower capital gains tax to 5%. We're now going to lower income tax to 5%. I'd consider going back, right? I'd consider going, and the streets are safe and everything else is good. I'd consider going back because it's my homeland, right? So all these countries have all these established countries have a huge advantage over the UAE and places like that, because they can be wrong for another 20 years. And if they then make a pivot and get it right, people will go back because we love our countries. It's just not right now.
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show. I gotcha. All right, well, you brought it up, British. I got to get into some of these British traditions with you. I like to end the conversations with some fun things. So I want to see some of your opinions on some of the traditional British traditions here, maybe some of the stereotypes and things like that. Because I was over in London and, you know, for some reason, they've got it more expensive than New York these days. So
it's better.
You think why? Let's hear it. Why is British?
Why do I think London's better? I don't think the UK is better than America. I don't think America is better than the UK. I think that America is an evolution on the United Kingdom. I think America is, you know, the best of British thinking taken to a new level without a limit on your ambition, right? I think that's what America is. That's why I think we have a special relationship between our two countries. So I do not think it's better. I just think we're a bit more, you know, we know how to do bougie better. You guys are a little bit tacky with that.
Okay, but on the less bougie side, what are your traditions? Is the English breakfast? Now explain to me this little like black, you know, bean pie that you guys put on the plate with there. Why adding that? I see no purpose in that.
Hey, did you try one?
Yeah, and I didn't think it was good at all.
Listen, what am I supposed to know? I mean, you guys have got all that high fructose corn syrup and all that shit in your food, so you don't even know what real food is. So, of course, how am I going to trust an American's opinion on food now? Come on.
That's fair. But, all right, then I have to get into the fish and chips. Then why are
what's wrong with fish and chips now?
Why are French fries called chips?
Firstly, chips are like thick, right? Like, what do you call them? What do you guys call
like
them?
The wedges, maybe? Potato wedges?
See, this is what happens. This is what happens when you allow these people that tried to run away from the empire for a 3% tax that are now like, oh, we defeated the British, but we're completely happy getting for a 43% tax rate. This is what happens when you try to take their opinion on British culture. Look, fish and chips is a good, wholesome British meal. And it's part of the tradition. It's part of the tradition of the working class. And it's great.
All right. Then you brought up tea, right? Obviously, we threw tea into the harbor. Tea isn't exactly huge here in the U.S. So why is it still such a big thing in Britain?
Tea is very aristocratic, right? Because the caffeine that tea gives you is slightly different to the caffeine that the mud water that you guys drink called coffee gives you. Tea is a much better, cleaner form of caffeine. Tea was for the aristocrats, the generals that were making the decisions. Coffee's for the workers. So if you're drinking coffee right now, you're a slave, right? That's what America made you. Corporate slaves drink coffee. Aristocrats drink tea. You just, by whatever you're drinking, you're just deciding which one you are.
Okay, so you said the British are full of rich and they know how to do bougies. So who are the British?
Listen, I'll tell you something else.
Okay,
there are families in the United Kingdom that have been rich longer than America's been around. Let's just put it like that.
All right, that's fair. All right, so then why are the richest people in Britain orthodontist? Explain that one to me.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I can't explain that one. Now you're asking me to defend things that are indefensible. I mean, like, what do you want me to say? We just need to all go and get veneers like you Americans and then make them as white as possible. That's what we need to do.
I know. That's not a great look on us. I know that is the new hot thing in the streets here to get the veneers. The chompers are insane these days. But
yep.
The last question I'll ask you is about the royal family. Like, I don't, what is the allure of it, man? Like, explain that to somebody like it's like I'm a little kid here.
Here's what it is. The royal family. See, what you have is you have the politics on one side, and then you have the showmanship on the other side, right? So our politicians can do what they need to do, and the royal family can represent the United Kingdom in the highest peak form of the United Kingdom as possible. Right now, we're challenged on this part. But, you know, with the Queen, name me one celebrity in the USA. Or one famous person that was in power for 82 years and didn't slip up once from a PR perspective. That's what the Queen accomplished. So from a British perspective, the royal family is extremely important because it's supposed to represent the highest values and ideals of what it means to be British, while the politicians can be separated to do what they need to do. Whereas in America, what you guys have is you have the mascot and the politician as one person, right? You have the president, who's supposed to be the representation of what America's supposed to be, as well as be the politician, right? And be the hard bully politician out there. And so it's all it is a separation of the mascots and the politicians. And that's extremely important to us, right? And certainly, you know, a lot of my American friends think that there's no monarchy in America. And I completely disagree, right? Because if you're looking at Joe Biden right now, and you don't think that there's a monarchy running the country behind Joe Biden, like, you're a complete and utter moron as far as I'm concerned. So don't ever talk to me about British royal family again, because clearly there is a monarchy in America. You just don't know what it is. So you think the president and your decision about who the president is actually matters.
Hey, that's fair to say, man. I mean, it is kind of wild that we've already admitted that Joe Biden is unfit to run, but yet he is still he's still allegedly running the whole country for another 6 months. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Can you imagine? Like, you're sitting there, you're like, okay, cool. So this guy can't run again because he doesn't know what day it is. But let's just leave him in power for 6 months. Like, how does that make any sense whatsoever? Like, it's wild to me. You know what happens in my country? If you're in the Conservative Party, there's something called the 1920 Commission, right? And they get together and they say, yeah, this person's unfit to run. And about 3 weeks later, that person's gone. And is replaced with someone else. Because they cannot afford to look like America looks like right now. Right? America is a laughingstock right now to the entire world. Because you've got Joe Biden falling asleep on the beach while you're dealing with an ex-president that looks absolutely competent and a vice president that, you know, can't seem to answer simple questions on stage. Like, what the fuck is going on here? So that tells me something is running the American engine and it's not the president. And that's a good thing. Thank God for that, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you on that. I mean, I couldn't agree more with that point, to be honest with you. But British, you've been very generous with your time and playing a little tennis here back and forth with me on the British versus America question. So I appreciate that. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you and what you got going on?
Yeah, listen, firstly, thanks for having me. I hope this was a good Barstool of Bitcoin. I like that description episode. And hopefully hope to be back. But yeah, if you want to find me, just type in British Hoddle on YouTube or on Twitter and look for this face and you'll come across it.
And I'll put all that in the show notes. And British, thanks so much, man.
Listen, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Brandon.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.